Hello, it's Thursday, August 10th, and you're tuning in to Wing Radio, which can be found at www.wingtv.net. Now, Lisa is usually here with us today, but she took a little fall this morning. She's a little shaken up, so she'll be fine. She'll be back tomorrow, but right now she's just taking a little bit of recuperation time, so we'll be glad to see her back tomorrow. Also, our guest today is Christopher John Bjerknes, and we're going to bring him on in a couple minutes, but first of all, as everybody knows by now, there was another quote-unquote terrorist event or a foiled terrorist event. And what I want to do right now is go over what the mainstream media is telling us about what happened. Now, of course, within the ensuing days and weeks, I'm sure we're going to see a different story or a different picture emerge. But right now, this is strictly what the mainstream media is telling us, that Scotland Yard foiled an attempt to blow up either six to ten U.S. inbound passenger jets from U.S. Airlines, United Airlines, and also Continental Airlines. In addition, 21 British Muslims from West London and Birmingham are now in custody. The Homeland Security Director, Michael Chertoff, has said that they are, and this is a quote from him, suggestive of having ties to Al-Qaeda. How convenient, of course. It is said that liquid explosives, in conjunction with some sort of electronic trigger or electronic device, was to be placed in carry-on hand luggage that wouldn't be detected by scanning equipment at the London airports. These planes then would be blown up in mid-flight, okay? Now, in response, America's Homeland Security has issued a terror code red, which is the highest alert that it's ever had, and which conveys a sense, basically, that attack is imminent. Everybody loves to hear that, right? Over in England, Heathrow Airport has been shut down. European airlines are canceling all flights into London, and there are major disruptions expected in all UK airports. Reports are that they said this would have been potentially bigger than 9/11. Of course, Tony Blair telephoned George Bush and filled him in on everything. And the National Guard has even been dispatched to Logan International Airport in Massachusetts, in Boston. So, with that in mind, that's the mainstream media's version of events. I'd like to welcome Christopher John Bjerknes to Wing TV. How you doing, Christopher?
I'm doing good. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're welcome. Now, Christopher is the author of two books I have right here, Albert Einstein, The Incorrigible Plagiarist, and also Anticipations of Einstein in the General Theory of Relativity. So, Christopher, we're going to get to your website, and we're going to give all that information out. But first of all, what are your impressions of this story that broke this morning?
Well, I find the timing of it, the timing of the arrest, highly suspicious. And why I find it highly suspicious is because it comes on the heels of a planned massive Israeli invasion and attack of Lebanon.
Exactly. Well, it's funny that you mention that because I received a couple emails this afternoon. One is from a sergeant. His name's Howard. And he said pretty much what you said, Christopher. He says, I guess Israel is getting bad public world opinion on Gaza and Lebanon these days. It's time to scare the British and us, that's the American sheeple, to get some sympathy from the world community about terrorism and distract everyone from what's going on in the Middle East with Israel. He concludes, he says, do you smell a rat? I sure do. Also, it's an election year. So I guess other people are thinking on the same lines that you are, don't you think?
Yes, I think it was very clever. I suspected that the next terrorist event would happen in Europe, but it was more clever to make it one which would involve both the United States and NATO countries, so that they would generate sympathy for Israel in both the United States and Europe, as well as creating a diversion from this planned massive invasion. And it also vilifies Muslims in general. And what is really going to happen is that this is one of many events conspiring to ruin the U.S. economy and to make Americans suffer in ways that the Jewish media will falsely blame on Muslims, but which will in truth have been caused by Jewish leadership.
Well,
and they're doing that so that the Americans will want to lash back, and that lashing back will happen in Syria and Iran, and Turkey will be a key player in the NATO forces and the airstrikes will probably come from NATO out of Turkish air bases.
Very, very interesting that you mention that, because I was saying something along the same lines this morning, and what really, in my eyes, is when I was talking to someone this morning, she was saying how hated America is around the world. Okay? And I said, well, think back to the late 1930s and the 1940s. What country was hated most in the entire world? Germany was. And I said, is this the Nazification of America, where we're condemned and hated so much around the world that if we ultimately take a fall, people say, well, they deserved it. Look at how horrible they are. But it's all being set up, just like in World War II, by these Zionists, isn't it?
Certainly is. And even the vilification of the Germans was not unprecedented. That began with Disraeli and with Moses Hess saying that the Germans had a genetic predilection to hate Jews, so they scapegoated the Germans for Jewish hatred of Germans.
So they gave this phony justification, huh?
Yes, and in Russia they vilified the Tsar because he asked the Zionists to stop being racist and to integrate into Russian society, and then they ruined the Russian people.
Right, right.
In Turkey, they instigated a revolution with the Young Turks, who were really crypto-Jews, and they destroyed the Turkish Empire. And one of the things they did was they committed genocide against the Armenian Christians and blamed it on the Turks to create animosity towards the Turks, who were Germany's ally in the First World War.
Which ultimately led to the
model that they've practiced many times.
Well, and that's the ultimate demise of the Ottoman Empire then, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Right.
And that was significant to them because the Ottoman Empire held Palestine.
Uh-huh. That's a damn good point. Now, let's take a break here, Christopher. We're talking to Christopher John Bjerknes. Tell everybody how they can find your two books, especially the one you're most well-known for, Albert Einstein, The Incorrigible Plagiarist. Tell everybody how they can find your website, your articles, and a little bit about this book on Albert Einstein.
The books which are published can be found on www.xtxinc.com. However, they can receive most of the materials which are contained in those books for free by going to www.jewishracism.com, as if Jewish racism were one word. The books are, in that sense, obsolete, and they would only be of importance to people who did not want to delve into the Zionist issue, and for if they wanted the books as collector's items.
Okay.
Other than that, they can receive all that information for free by going to jewishracism.com and clicking on the link to the manufacture and sale of St. Einstein.
All right, very good. Now, as I said, you've become most well-known, I believe, for the Albert Einstein book. In a nutshell, let everybody know what conclusions you came up with in this book about his plagiarism.
Albert Einstein plagiarized the special theory of relativity largely from Heinrich Antoon Lorentz and Jules-Henri Poincaré. He plagiarized many aspects of the general theory of relativity also from Poincaré and from Ernst Mach and from Johann Georg von Soldner and Paul Gerber and David Hilbert.
Okay.
He was a career plagiarist. The things he is best known for, he did not originate. And the reason that he became famous was he aligned himself with Zionist Jews in Germany, which was very unusual for a German Jew. Most German Jews strongly opposed Zionism and wanted better relations with Gentiles and to assimilate into German culture. And when he did that, the Zionist press in Germany, in America, and in England heavily promoted him and smeared all of his critics. It was very well known at the time that he was a plagiarist.
And I was just reading something in Time magazine a week or two ago that it had some of his letters. I don't know if you had a chance to see that, but when I was doing some research for the show today, I noticed that you've taken some heat from your conclusions. How would you characterize, I don't know if I'd say attacks upon you, but how would you characterize the negative reaction to your books?
Again, it's a typical Zionist method of distraction. They're all ad hominem attacks. They don't address the substance of what I said. Either that or they misrepresent what I've said so that they can build up a straw man to knock down.
Mm-hmm.
But my books have held up very well. I've received a great deal of books have been mentioned in major physics journals and in peer-reviewed physics books. So far, I haven't received any substantive rebuttals.
Well, and I only got this book in the mail yesterday, so I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I did notice that the length of the book is 408 pages, the text itself is 236 pages, and all the rest, nearly 200 pages of footnotes to substantiate your work. So this isn't something that you flippantly did off the cuff. It looks like you backed this up for almost 200 pages.
Well, I tried very much to make the argument solid because I knew that Einstein was such an icon that in order to overcome his popularity, I would have to prove very thoroughly what I was saying. And it was easy for me to do because many people in the past realized that Einstein was a plagiarist and heavily referenced their work, which made it much easier for me.
Very good. Now, that's xtxinc.com and also jewishracism.com if you don't actually want to buy the book itself. So let's get back now. One last thing on this this event this morning before we move on. The big hoopla in the media is that these supposed terrorists were planning to use liquid explosives. Well, one of our viewers, Michael, he said, okay, so they're planning to use liquid explosives. The airport security systems are panicking. He says, aren't they supposed to be looking for this kind of thing anyway? So what's the big deal? Like, they're saying that the whole world's going to change now and you're not allowed to have shampoo, but with Homeland Security, and I'm sure they're doing the same thing in London, wouldn't they look for this in the first place anyway?
Well, there are many aspects to that. It could be a profit-making opportunity for companies that specialize in screening for liquid-based explosives.
Mm-hmm.
It is certainly a means to cause panic among the general public and to slow down air travel.
Right, right.
And to hurt the American economy and the economy of the rest of the world.
Yep, that's a good point. Now, we have this little war going on over in the Middle East. Israel is getting ready to expand their ground offensive. Now, the latest reports are they're delaying it for 3 days, 2 or 3 days, so that they can see if some kind of peace effort by the UN is going to be worked out. Well, we know that's a bunch of crap. What they're doing is just trying to get all their ducks in line. But they have 30,000 more troops now on the border ready to push in. And from public opinion polls in Israel, it seems like there's 90% plus support of this war in Lebanon, where they're trying to completely destroy the infrastructure of Lebanon. And Christopher, what does this say about the people in Israel that are so supportive of this massacre, this war machine that's getting ready to bowl over even further into Lebanon?
One would expect that the Jews, based on their experiences in Russia and in Germany during World War II, would be more sympathetic to the plight of others. And when you say 90%, that's almost 100% of Jews, if that's calculated based on the total population of Israel, because
mm-hmm.
we have a substantial Arab population as well. So that's nearly unanimous support for this inhuman crime against humanity that Israel is committing. But I suspect that the support will grow even stronger because this has a very historic and religious significance for the Jewish people. Their attack on Lebanon is following exactly the plans that are laid out in Ezekiel chapters 27 and 28, and I'm sure that they have a Jewish king who is orchestrating all these events to artificially and deliberately fulfill Jewish messianic prophecies.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from on that one. Well, let's turn our attention a little bit domestically. 2 days ago, we had some primary elections. The two big ones, one up in New England, one in the South. Joe Lieberman, the Jewish neocon, lost, while Cynthia McKinney lost, but there was a lot of outside Jewish money coming in across the country that was going to her opponent. So, with these two big primary races, what were your conclusions or what are your observations about what took place 2 days ago?
Well, one thing that certainly struck me was the bitterness of the media towards Lamont for his victory, which is incomprehensible unless it's based upon ethnic bias.
Uh-huh.
And The other thing that struck me is that the defeat of Cynthia McKinney has a chilling effect on anyone who would otherwise speak out on Israel. It's a threat that we being the Jewish community, have complete control over American politics, and if you don't toe the line, you're out.
And she's one of the very few that has spoken out, at least in this current Congress, that has spoken out. And we all know the books in the past written by Paul Findlay and so forth that show what happens if you speak out against the Jewish lobby. You're not around very long, are you?
No, Findlay and Percy were out. As soon as they started speaking out against Israel, they were out. And they as you said, the way they do it is they smear you in the press, and then they pour all kinds of money into opponents' campaigns, and they very often run a spoiler who sucks off a large percentage of the vote of whoever it is who is opposing Israel.
Exactly. That's a very good point. Now, from my understanding, this coming Sunday on 60 Minutes, Iran's President Ahmadinejad is going to appear. Now, I hope I have that correct. I could be wrong, but that's what I've heard. So he's supposed to be on 60 Minutes this Sunday night. What are your thoughts on Ahmadinejad? Is this guy a resistance force against the Zionists, or is he being used as a dupe to get this whole mess going over in the Middle East?
I suspect that Ahmadinejad is a Zionist agent who has betrayed the Iranian people and is working to provoke World War III. And I suspect the same is true of Lebanon's Prime Minister, Senora.
Uh-huh.
He's a very wealthy banker, and his chieftain before him was Harari, who was also incredibly wealthy and had strong connections with the Saudi royal family. And the Saudi royals, the Jordanian royals, all of them have been heavily infiltrated by the Mossad and by the CIA. They get massive bribes, and I have heard that the Saudi royal family is actually a crypto-Jewish family.
Uh-huh. Well, your answer is going to disappoint some people that have placed their faith in Ahmadinejad, that this guy could be one of the forces of good. Regardless, what then, if Ahmadinejad is a Zionist or he's working with Israel, who then are the forces, the authentic forces in the Middle East that are in true opposition to this cabal of monsters known as Israel or the Zionists?
I'm afraid that it's largely the peoples of the Arab and Persian and Turkish communities. Their governments have all been infiltrated by Zionist influence. And if you want to understand what's happening and what's about to happen, you really need to look at a map and to study the Bible a little bit. And the way that Jewish diplomats foment wars is that they go into these countries, most or all of whom have leadership which has been corrupted by them, and they make them promises of what war will get for them. And they give them other incentives to engage in wars. And I suspect that they have given the Turks the incentive that they will solve their Kurdish problem. And they have given the Kurds the incentive that they will create a Kurdistan out of part of Turkey, northern Syria, northern Iraq, and northern Iran. And they are probably working on the Egyptians, who have communist leadership, promised them that they will turn the entire Islamic world communist. And, of course, their agents in Jordan and Saudi Arabia are very concerned about revolutionary forces.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure that they are promising those people that they will secure them from Shiite Muslims and revolutions, and if worse comes to worse, they'll help to shuttle them out and protect their vast fortunes.
So then
those are probably the machinations which are taking place behind the scenes.
So then these governments in the Middle East aren't any different than our government that's been taken over, usurped, and held hostage by these same forces. Is that correct?
Yes, and the process has been going on for a very long time. The Rothschilds thoroughly infiltrated both the Sultan of Turkey and the Khedive of Egypt and led those nations into economic ruin and revolution deliberately.
Well, let's go into a second then about the Middle East itself, because when the current boundaries were formed, they weren't always like this. We had outside European forces that came in and divvied up the Middle East. Give everybody a little overview of how this Middle East was manipulated into its current boundary nation-state form?
Well, it largely began with Napoleon, who attacked Syria in hopes of restoring the Jews. And Napoleon believed that he was the Messiah of the Jews. And he went around Europe emancipating the Jews so that when Palestine was restored, they could all move to Palestine. And eventually, he was so successful that the Jews began to assimilate into European society, which scared Jewish leadership because they were losing their grip on the Jewish people. So they then defeated Napoleon economically and militarily. Now, from Napoleon, we can fast forward to World War I, where the Ottoman Empire was destroyed and divvied up in the 1920s. And there were several agreements and several betrayals that happened in that process. The British had initially promised the Arabs that if they helped to fight with the British against the Turkish Empire, that they would gain control and form independent states, including Palestine.
Uh-huh.
The Arabs were betrayed by Zionist Jews who also cut a deal with the British government, promising to bring America into the war in exchange for the Balfour Declaration.
Okay.
But the Balfour Declaration itself did not promise to create a Jewish state. It only promised to sponsor the idea that Jews could find a homeland within a Palestinian state. But that was later misrepresented. Now, following the war, the British and French came into conflict over who would control much of Palestine, because Palestine was really a part of Syria at that time, and the French had strong interests in Syria. And that almost led to the Second World War in the 1920s.
Okay.
Now, before that happened, the Zionist Jews had tried to coax England and France into Palestine by promising them a trade route to the east. And in the case of the British, it would be a trade route to India. And that very method that they used to lure the British into the region and into buying the Suez Canal and other things worked against them, because then some of the British got greedy and they wanted to hold Palestine for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the Zionist League of Nations split up Palestine between the French mandate and the British mandate.
And, of course, then we entered into World War II, and the rest is history. Now, well, if we jump forward to 9/11 and we see how this was the first step into what's taking place right now, and people wonder, people that don't know the inner workings of how these neocons within our own government and also the Zionists in Israel operate, but they say, how could someone deliberately commit an act of state-sponsored terrorism like that? But I believe you say that these people are deliberately trying to make the world a more evil place so they can somehow bring upon this Messiah or whatever. Will you expand on that?
Yes. The whole concept of the New World Order is a Jewish concept, which is firmly established in the Hebrew Bible itself. And the Jews prophesied that there would be vastly destructive Holocaust wars, and that following those wars, the Jewish Messiah would enter into a reign of peace, and that all peoples other than righteous Jews would be judged by the Messiah and exterminated. And that means that all Gentiles will be exterminated. But when they talk about the New World Order and the Rosicrucians and the Illuminati, all this is merely a means that Jewish leadership has to fulfill these Jewish messianic prophecies by political means.
And aren't all these terms globalist or Illuminati and New World Order, isn't that used a lot of times by people to actually mask the identity of the true figures behind what's going on?
It is, and it was always intended to be that way. But when you cut through the nonsense and look at what it is that they're actually trying to achieve, what they're trying to achieve is the world government, which is prophesied by the Jewish prophets.
Right.
So Jewish king who will rule that world.
So people that continually push these words, New World Order, globalist, Illuminati, without specifically identifying who the real origin and push behind this is it deceptive in the way they're masking this true force?
It's both deceptive and a form of scapegoating.
Right.
Their plan is always to discredit actions in war so that people become so sick of it that the Jews can then step forward with their power in the media and propose the idea that the only way to end this suffering is to end national sovereignty and have a world government. And just coincidentally, that world government will be run by Jews and fulfills all Jewish messianic prophecies.
I mean, that's a very, very chilling thought. Now, we hear the word continually, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism. Well, if we go back to Theodore Herzl, the founder of the Zionist movement, its father. Well, in 1897, in his diary, he said it is essential that the suffering of Jews becomes worse. The anti-Semites shall be our best friends. This whole thing is being orchestrated as part of their agenda, isn't it?
Yes, and it goes much further back than Theodore Herzl. It goes all the way back to Moses. And the whole purpose of Judaism is to segregate the Jewish people. It's a racist belief system. So that the enemies of the Jews are actually their best friends, in their view, because they force the Jews to segregate and to not assimilate. So Jews have always been the primary sponsors of anti-Semitism and have always created groups, anti-Semitic groups, so that they have a force which unites them.
Mm-hmm.
And the Zionists created Adolf Hitler and created the Nazi Party as a means to segregate all the Jews and force them to Palestine against their will.
Well, let me stop you there because that was my next question. Let me run this by you real quick, and then you comment. Hitler worked with the Jews. They killed off the weakest Jews, meaning the Jews wanted to kill off the weakest Jews to have this migration back to Palestine, and there was no genocidal plot hatched at Wannsee at this conference. Comment on those three statements.
The Nazis were a part of the social Darwinist movement, which Moses Hess co-opted to make a Jewish movement. And they created the Holocaust in part as a eugenics program to undo the genetic damage that had been done to Jews by their segregation in the ghettos, most of which resulted from the Jews segregating themselves. That's one part of it. The other part is that the Nazis were created by the Jews to spread communism throughout Europe. They were closet communists. They were part of the controlled opposition of Jewish communism and Jewish Zionism, which worked together to destroy Gentile governments and create a world revolution, which would put Jews in tyrannical control of the entire world. And Hitler was a major part in that. Now, the Jews did not want to go to Palestine. Most Western Jews hated Zionists. Most of the Zionist movement came from Eastern European Jews. And what the Germans did was they got lots of money from Jewish bankers, ultimately from the Rothschilds through Warburg and Oppenheimer and Guggenheim and Moses Pinkelet. That put Hitler into power. Hitler then segregated the Jews and instituted laws which were essentially Jewish laws against intermarriage between Gentiles and Jews. And then he terrorized the Jews to the extent that after the war they would move to Palestine and stay. But even after the war, the Jews were reluctant to move to Palestine. And the Zionist Jews continued to commit atrocities against other Jews in order to force them to Palestine. They terrorized the Jews of Hungary in 1956. They committed terrorist acts, cloaking themselves as if they were Arabs in Iraq to terrorize the Jews of Iraq and the Jews of Egypt to force them to Palestine.
So they were literally eating their own just to promote this agenda, this sick, twisted agenda.
Well, Jews, the Kabbalistic Jews who are behind this believe that evil is good and that both evil and good stem from God, as it says in Isaiah. And they feel that they can provoke God to bring about the messianic era by making the world either entirely good or entirely evil.
Mm-hmm.
And since they believe that human nature is essentially evil, it will be much easier to accomplish that end by committing great acts of evil. And the Jews who are now committing this genocide against the Lebanese ought to be forewarned that in Zechariah chapter 13, verses 8 and 9, it says that in this end times battle, two-thirds of the Jewish population
just amazing. It's truly amazing. We're talking with Christopher John Bjerknes, and we only have a couple minutes left, but you can find more of his writing. And I'll tell you, Christopher, this has been one of the most amazing shows I think we've done here. It's just fascinating what you're laying on us. His website can be found at jewishracism.com, and on there, I found something very interesting. You write about the three deadly tenets of Judaism and Zionism. It's segregation, it's supremacy, and slaughter. So in these last few minutes, tell us a little bit about how you came up with this and really what it means to the world at large.
Well, the Jews created for themselves a religion which is based on racism and segregation and supremacy. And the three tenets of Judaism and Zionism follow forth from that religion which they created of a jealous God who calls upon the Jews to destroy all other people so that Jewish people will never intermarry with other peoples and worship their gods. And that is the underlying, highly dangerous, sophistical belief system that these races created to control their population. And what their God tells them is that they are a divine people who are superior to other humans who should be viewed as the issue of cattle. So they are called upon to keep themselves segregated as they have done for 2,500 years, and they are given the hopes of a utopia that if they accomplish these things, if they remain segregated and obey this God which calls on them to remain segregated, they will then obtain a kingdom which will rule the earth and in which they will be able to slaughter all Gentiles so that there is no danger of their seed mixing with the inferior races. And in the course of time, they've created all kinds of mythologies to justify their hatred of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to pass off their hatred as if it's justified by other people's hatred of them.
Well, Christopher,
slaughter other people, and when people react to that threat, they say, see, you hate us, and therefore our hatred of you was justified.
Right, right. Well, when you mention this God of theirs, whenever you, if you go into mainstream society and you had mentioned the Judeo-Christian God, which is such an anomaly or a misnomer anyway, but this God doesn't sound like the same God that most people would picture, is it?
No, and the early Christians very much opposed the God of the Old Testament, who they called the Creator God.
Uh-huh.
And within concurrent Judaism of that period, there was a belief that there was more than one God. There was the Creator God who created the evilness of flesh, and then there was an ultimate God who was hidden behind all things.
Uh-huh.
And Christianity was the revelation of this ultimate God, and that the God of Judaism was, in effect, the satanic God.
Very interesting. Very, you know, and it makes sense. One last thing, and some people don't like to make predictions or look into the future, but as we said earlier, we're poised 30,000 troops, Israeli troops, ready to invade even deeper into Lebanon. What are you foreseeing in the near future in the Middle East?
Well, Ezekiel chapters 27 and 28 call for a genocide of the Lebanese people and for the utter destruction of the nation of Lebanon. And the Israelis are going to try to get the United States to engage in a war against the world and to escalate this war into a nuclear conflict. So I expect that after they have leveled Lebanon, they will then attack Syria.
Uh-huh.
They will have Ahmadinejad in Iran attack the Americans who are stationed in Iraq, which will draw in the Americans and NATO. And then Turkey is the real wild card. Will the people of Turkey revolt against their government, which will obviously side with NATO, and then fight with Islam? Or will they follow their government and join NATO in destroying all these northern countries? If they do that and they accomplish the destruction of Syria and Iran, the Zionist racists will then turn their attention to Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt, and they will wipe out those nations and utterly destroy them.
Israel's sitting on 200-plus nuclear warheads.
development of those nuclear weapons, as was South Africa.
In May of 1967, I think they were officially nuclear. Are nuclear bombs going to be lobbed in the Middle East?
I believe so, and I believe it will be deliberate, it will be unnecessary, it will be unprovoked, and it will be done as a means of fulfilling messianic prophecy, but it will be justified on economic terms. They will try to say that America and the other nations are falling into economic collapse, and that to safeguard these countries from a massive depression, they will be forced to use nuclear weapons because they cannot afford prolonged troop-involved wars. And they have driven Americans so deeply into debt with this war in Iraq that they will attempt to justify the use of nuclear weapons on a purely economic basis. And I think the Muslim world would be well advised to try to drive a wedge between Americans and Israelis and to not allow the Israelis to lead Americans by the nose into this third world war.
God, I couldn't second that any stronger. I mean, it's so obvious to us. And, Christopher, this interview has been absolutely fascinating. We're going to get you back for sure. Christopher's writings can be found at JewishRacism.com, also his books at XTXInc.com. And, Christopher, absolutely amazing. I want to thank you for coming on Wing TV today.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for the opportunity to express my views.
And make sure you keep in touch with us. If you have any new articles or anything come out, fire them our way, and we'll be sure to post them on our site, okay?
Okay, and people can look for my blog on JewishRacism.com, where I discuss some of the things which I've discussed on your program today.
Very good. Thank you for coming on. Now, tomorrow, we're going to talk about the Sam Danner case, and I know a lot of people are already excited about this show. Hopefully this will be the last word on this, which ended up being a very ugly and dirty case. But we're speaking with Christopher John Bjerknes, truly a fascinating person, a fascinating guest. So we'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV. Until then, keep your eyes open because there is a lot going on.